You have close to 8 crore creators in India, but only 1 lakh creators make any sort of money online.
Patreon mein aur aap mein kya farak hai?
Whoa. It got out of hand.
The key word to develop trust is transparency.
We just got super technical about it.
We want to become a marketplace for content licenses.
Bitcoin is like, if you want to place it in terms of gold, gold has no future cash flow either.
We've been 15 months into the cycle, actually, since we first launched our royalty sharing cards.
Once the what is understood, the why is actually very clear.
Don't you think the problem still remains?
I think we're missing a very important piece here. Hi guys, I'm Himanshu. I'm the founder of Fanstar. I've been working with the startup ecosystem in India for the last 7 odd years, along with my co-founder Sahil. With Fanstar, we basically are solving the problem of monetization in the creator economy. So we've all seen the world change from mainstream platforms, mainstream news channels like CNBC, BBC, to more creator-driven content on platforms like Instagram and YouTube. So we think that this transformation is only going to get larger and amplified in a way that truly everybody on the internet can create and consume content at will. And it's already happening. So we want to enable crores of micro creators out there to be able to create content and also monetize from that content. So at Fanstar, we enable these micro creators to be able to form meaningful communities. And we are globally the first platform that enables creators to form meaningful connections with their audience and for the audience to own a part of future's creator growth.
You are enabling creators to create their own micro community, or micro creators to create their communities, right?
Yeah, so kickstart their monetization journey, basically. Yeah, by creating a community.
If I had to ask the most obvious question, the first question that comes to my head is, Patreon mein aur aap mein kya farak hai?
So Patreon is more like a membership model. It's an expense-driven model, a subscription model, where you have to pay to watch content, to get services. Whereas Fanstar is totally changing the game, wherein you buy digital cards, which enable audience to own a right to a creator's commercial license, a partial license. So think of it this way. A creator has a YouTube channel. The fan buys a digital card of that particular creator because the fan believes in the content that they are putting out and believes in the growth story of that particular creator. So the audience in return gets a piece of the commercial pie that the creator is going to generate from that YouTube channel in the coming future. So it's not an expense from an audience point of view. It's more like an investment, right? Where this digital card is going to pay itself and the audience is going to become a meaningful part of that creator's community going forward, right?
Himanshu, I have a master's in finance and Vishrut has done a CFA level one. Securitization is very close to my heart. And what securitization means for our audience is that, let's say a company is a cake. Cake can be cut into a lot of smaller pieces and then those pieces can be distributed into people. Those people are what we call shareholders in our fancy language. Now, the speciality about this cake is that it is an ever-increasing cake. So the piece of the cake that you'll have, if the company does well, that cake starts increasing. Me being able to distribute that cake is called securitization, right? Anything with a future cash flow can be securitized and valued. So what that means is, if my influencer in the future is going to make money, that money is incoming. It's going to come home. Now that home can be the creator, or that home can be the creator saying that, you know what, in the future I'll get this money. But how about this? You pay me this money now and take my future money from me. And how you will get that future money will be a little more than what you will pay me today. So that is essentially the process that you are capturing, right? We will go deeper into regulation because that is going to be the highest form of play that you will need about making sure that it actually happens. But let's start off with, how receptive have influencers been to your company?
So I think I'll be honest, in our 18-month journey since we've been live, so we've been developing the product for the last 2 years, but it's been close to 15 to 18 months since we've been properly live with our platform, with the consumer-facing platform. So I think the first 6 months was where we had to put in the most work in terms of getting the creators to sign up for such a contract, for such an arrangement, for them to understand the potential benefits of sharing their future income. So everybody, every creator out there used to basically say that, why do we need to do this, right? And it was only after those set of pioneer creators that we worked with in the first 6 months, and we figured out how the community that bought into this digital card helped that creator kickstart their growth, amplify their growth. And we did that through enormous tracking of their social channels and also tracking the user behavior. People who are buying their fan cards as opposed to people who are not buying their fan cards. The organic sharing, the organic engagement actually added a lot of boost to the creator's growth, which essentially led them to close more brand deals, leading to more monetization for the creator. And I think once we sort of figured that process out for the first set of 5 to 10 creators, it became very easy for us to upsell to creators that, you know, this is the way forward in terms of shortening the time to the threshold monetization that every micro creator wants to achieve out there, right? And that is when we saw in the 7 to 8 months when we saw micro creators started signing up on their own on our platform. And I think that was the first pre-product market fit sign that we could gauge from the market, from the creator's front, right? As to they're getting the a message right, right? So I think that was the case for the first 8 to 9 months. And now we are working with more than 2,000 creators on our platform. And we have a bunch of creators, starting from micro creators to emerging creators to even mega creators, right? But our sole sort of focus is on the micro and the emerging market, right? Because that is the set of influencers we believe will deliver most value to their fan card holders, to their audience, in terms of the growth that they will experience over the next couple of years or so, right?
Himanshu, can you just do a couple of aesthetic things before we go on? Can you define what a micro creator is? Can you define what an emerging creator is? Can you define mega?
Yeah, so the creator market is basically segmented into 4 or 5 different categories of creators. This is done to basically understand what is the level of influence of that particular creator. So the market is divided into essentially nano creators, micro creators, emerging creators, macro creators, and mega creators. So I'll start with nano. So nano creators, usually, this is not a very, this is a loosely held definition, but this is largely followed. A nano influencer can be somebody with a combined community of less than 10,000 followers across platforms. Somebody with a 10,000 to a 1 lakh community can be considered micro. Emerging can be somewhere between 100,000 to 500,000. And then 500,000 to 1 million can be macro. And mega can be anybody with a combined cumulative audience size of more than 1 million.
So essentially, you're playing the startup game. You're saying instead of investing in startups, you're investing in micro creators because they are at the place which has the most upside for you.
I think a better way to sort of look at it, apart from the investing example that you took and Akhil also mentioned, right, is to think of it as a royalty sharing contract, right? Just as you have rights to a particular song, where you have the composer, the lyricist, the singer, and obviously the IP right holder, right? So the royalty from those songs, from various commercial exploitation, is spread across various stakeholders in a certain revenue sharing model, right? So that's your typical IP royalty contract. That's what we do with Fanstar. We bring in the creator. We don't tokenize the creator in its entirety. We basically take a small portion of their income stream of the content, and we basically open that up to their community for a possible sort of collaboration in the future growth, right? So it's more like a royalty sharing agreement between the influencer and their audience, the early backers of that particular influencer.
So people are buying into particular projects of the influencer rather than buying into everything that the influencer will do from now on.
Yeah, so you can say that. You can say projects, but right now we are doing channels, right? So essentially, a creator can put out his YouTube channel up for a partial rights to his YouTube channel up for sale on our platform for a defined period, right? Usually that period is 18 months or so, but that's configurable on the from the creator's side, right? We do provide them with tools to sort of customize their offerings in terms of how many number of cards they want to put out, because essentially they live on the blockchain and they are finite in terms of supply because they are backed by IP rights, right? So they can choose to basically tokenize a part of their whole.
Whoa! It got out of hand. Let's go with what just happened. Tokenized blockchain on the chain.
We just got super technical about it.
Let's break it down for a four-year-old.
So let's take out blockchain. Let's take out tokenization. Let's take out all these big words. And let's dumb it down.
Yeah. So essentially, the way to look at it is, like, you have your father has five sources of income, right? He does his own business. He invests in certain companies. And he might also run a restaurant somewhere, or he might be a partner in a restaurant. As a kid, if you were to take inheritance from your father can basically entitle you to rights of all these properties, right? Or might entitle you to rights to only a certain set of properties, right? Let's say he will only give Akhil part of his restaurant earnings, right? So that's basically tokenization. You're tokenizing the inheritance, or you're tokenizing the property set. So that's what we do for the influencer, right? You break it down for him and then you make it configurable. The creator can choose to include any portion of his content that he creates out, or content license that he creates out, right? And give it to his audience in an advanced fashion, right? So as to say, right? And this is the asset that hopefully will grow in future. And that is what the that's the bet that the audience is taking on the creator, because they believe that the creator is creating good quality content and it's going to continue doing so for the period of the fan card.
Again, because finance is familiar to both of us and we've done a lot of podcasts on finance and things like that, it's like companies choosing to dilute so much percentage of its shares. It's saying ki, I'm only offering a certain percentage.
No. It's not, Vishrut. Because in this case, there is a timeline. So you are saying, I am diluting my shares for X amount of months. But Himanshu, that brings up the next problem. The next problem is that when I'm investing and I look at angel firms being someone who is very small, you know, not worth a lot, but hopefully they'll just shoot to the moon in the future. When I invest in an angel firm and I look for my 20x, 30x return over the next decade or so, I know that for the next decade and going forward, their ownership will still belong to me. In this case, a micro influencer who might shoot to the moon in the future, I am betting on their current projects, hoping that it will be evergreen content. And even when the evergreen content might take off, when they actually hit their 1 million, 2 million subscriber point, I am no longer involved in the license.
I think we're missing a very important piece here. So when I mentioned basically rights to a particular channel, right? So for a predefined period, let's say 18 months. So it includes all the content that will be put out on that channel for the next 18 months. So it's not just the project that creator might be doing currently, right? But includes all the content pieces that creator would be putting out over the next 18 months, right? So that gives you an ownership of the rights for the content that person is going to create for that particular channel for the next 18 months or the validity of the license period, right?
Don't you think the problem still remains? Because, see, creator life is very funny. Okay, so Vishrut and I are right now running this podcast. By your definition, we are the nano creators. We are ultra small, just starting off. We have 1,000 followers across all our channels, right? So creator life is based on something that Nassim Nicholas Taleb calls black swan events. What is a black swan event? Is Normally, what happens is you have 500 followers. You will increase, let's say, 20%, 30% per month. Every 3-4 months, you will double up. And then every 3-4 months, you will double up. But you're waiting for one of the shorts, one of the videos, one of the guests whose content just goes crazy. It goes viral. You get that 5 million, 10 million, 20 million views on one thing. And from there, you get a lot of subscribers. Me being a stakeholder or a shareholder at the time for those 18 months, I'm really hoping that the Black Swan event happens in these 18 months. And at the end of the 18 months, do I get my principal back or is my principal gone? That would be the real question.
So I think, Akhil, very important point as to you might hit that escape velocity in that 18 months or you might not. And then what happens to your initial sum? So one of the backstops that we have is obviously the fact that these fan cards are also coupled with a lot of creator curated experiences. So as a fan, you might be coming for the royalty part of it, but also for a set of exclusive perks, right? So that's one. The second part as to why we basically started with the 18-month license period. So when you compare creators as an asset class, they're not an asset class right now, but let's just assume they're an asset class with any other asset class. So with creators or the creator economy in general, the way social media works is that 18 months is a lifetime in terms of a creator, a growth cycle. And you can make that out from from key engagement and growth metrics, right, which are available on our platform. So as a fan, as somebody who wants to sort of own a piece of a YouTube channel of a creator, right? So you also get access to a lot of numbers, historical numbers as to how the creator is doing, which you can extrapolate and basically figure out what the returns are going to look like in terms of royalty payouts, right? So we help audience with all those tools to make an informed decision. A new feature on our product called Returns Calculator is something that helps people to understand, you know, how the creator is doing over the last 6 months and how they're going to fare in the next 18 months or so, right? So I think a combination of all these factors makes this fan card a very interesting way for creators to hook their early community, which then act as a base for them to increase their organic engagement. And just a very important point regarding the virality, which you mentioned, like any Black Swan event coming along in the 18-month period, right? How does that come along? How does virality come along? So we need to go deeper into it, I guess. We need to understand, in order to hit that Black Swan event, you need a ton of supporting factors to be able to do that. So one of the most important factor in the whole Black Swan event probability is the organic engagement, organic sharing, organic liking, right? And that basically leads you up to a Black Swan event. So you look at any profile that has gone viral, it has a certain set of patterns that happened before it went viral. So for the algorithm to pick up certain content and make it viral, apart from relatability, it is also about that organic shareability, that organic likability, right? Which are contributing factors. So I think that is what our model enables for these creators, right? And essentially the audience also gets to become a part of it because they sort of believed in the content earlier, right?
For organic likability, there needs to be a lot of people who actually know about me, know about my card, are willing to engage with my card. I would love to know your user base. I would love to know how many people are using, how many people are actually being able to buy cards. And since your first 18-month cycle is over, have you run through any of the exhausted cycles with influencers?
No, actually. So we've been 15 months into the cycle, actually, since we first launched our income sharing cards, royalty sharing cards. I think we'll hit that escape. We'll hit those numbers and detailed analysis in the next 3 to 4 months for our first set of, because we initially started with only perks driven fan cards just to test the waters. And in terms of numbers, we have sold more than 50,000 fan cards till now, right? This number is basically serving close to 800 to 900 creators who first launched, right? And current user base is close to 2 lakh users that use our website to buy products, right? So that's the stage that we are at, and we are growing on the user base front. We are going around 50%, 30 to 40% monthly, right? And on the creators front, we are growing at around 45 to 50%, right, month on month. And this is the speed that we've picked up in the last 2 to 3 months, given the a lot of modules being added to the tech side of things, the creator dashboard, and all the other tools that helps the creators launch their fan cards in a much more speedier fashion, which was not the case earlier.
So guys, we're going to have a follow-up episode with Himanshu in June to understand ki kya hua hai, what's the progress like, what's the,
yes,
you know, we'll get y'all the lowdown on the numbers then.
Yeah, and we do, and I think Vishrut, it's funny you said that, because we anyways keep posting those numbers on our social media. So
Oh yeah.
So we do that on a monthly basis for each for a lot of our top performing creators, right? How have they done? How have fans done? Right? What kind of payouts have been given? So all that analysis is available. We don't need to wait till the end of the cycle. So hopefully, a lot of users can come in and sort of get access to that data.
So Himanshu, let's get into the weeds. Banking system, financial system, any place where I am to get money, or I am to first put up my own money, let's say, and then hopefully get more money back, works on this one word called trust, right? How do I build trust? How do I know that the creator is not lying to me? And, you know, maybe the creator is making $100, telling me I'm making 5 and giving me pennies. How do I get out of my brain to say that, you know what, even though this is not a government regulated service as of now, I can still trust it?
Yeah. So I think therein the key word to develop trust is transparency, right? First of all, and that's why we sort of, when we initially set out to do this, we said that we are going to do it on chain, as in all the collections are going to be on chain for on a public blockchain for people to sort of get access to all the data, and to make sure that the supply numbers we put out are the actual finite supply numbers, right, which can't be mutated, right? So one is that. The other, on the income front, right? What kind of cash flow is being generated by the license sources, right? I think for that, what we are increasingly doing is that we are putting out modules in our product where we have API integration with these major platforms like Instagram and YouTube, from where we are pulling out their AdSense data and all the related data, and which keeps flowing to the dashboard for a particular creator, right? And the fan card holders of that particular creator will be able to drill down and see what's the growth like month on month. And because this data is not being given by the creator, but by the platform itself, right? And we do have a lot of checks internally to make sure that the data that is being pulled out from various sources makes sense as to what the creator is putting out, right? So there are a lot of audit controls as well, right? So I think on our end, we are doing everything possible to make it very transparent for anybody new to come in and first look at the data and then make their own decision, right?
Himanshu, there's another problem with this. So see, I love what you're doing, and I believe it is a heavy requirement, because when a country moves forward from roti, kapda, makan, pani, internet, the next stage is that the country starts consuming. And they consume to keep entertained, to keep in touch with life. So there's a lot of TV, there's a lot of YouTube, there's a lot of influencers, there's a lot of reels, right? So that's what the country does. It's the general next step. So being able to empower these people is amazing, because, you know, Vishwath and I would also love to be a part of it. The deal here is, let's say you came onto the podcast and I charged you money for the podcast. So let's say Himanshu comes on and I charge you 100 rupees. Generally, I would charge you like in 50, 60,000, 2 lakh rupees. But let's say I charge you 100 rupees to come on the
podcast. Putting out the pricing out there.
for easier numbers. So that 100 rupees, YouTube doesn't need to know about. Now, when YouTube runs ads on my content and then pays me off based on those ads is when the platform will tell you, okay, this person made this much money. Or when I get official sponsored content, then backdoor whatever the sponsorship deal was, YouTube doesn't need to know that. Right? So, I am not going to disclose that to YouTube, but you are buying rights to my YouTube income stream and not those income streams which actually make me money, because YouTube will give me barely anything, especially at like 10,000, 20,000 point.
So to answer that question, Akhil, so the tokenization that we do on the channels front, that's also configurable by the creator. So as you rightly mentioned, that for some of the creators, AdSense might make a chunk of their revenue, but most of the creators don't make a lot of money from AdSense per se, right? They make from their own brand collaborations. So for brand collaborations, we do, yeah, especially in India, yeah. So for that, we figured that out in the first few months of starting the platform, that we need to focus on those areas much more, because that's a bigger revenue contributor for the creators that we are targeting, right? So for that, what we do is we track paid partnerships on Instagram for the creators who have decided to put out the brand partnership income also in the license agreement. Right. We pull that data. We also have legal agreements with the creator and the agency that's representing them. So we do get data from those two sources also. And we triangulate all the three datas into an algorithm that makes sense of whether it makes sense with the historical data or not, or whether there are aberrations in the data. And we do correct for that as well. Right. So there's three level of data that we collect for all these sources, and they're all backed by Indian copyright contracts as recognized by Indian law, right? So these are typical revenue sharing, royalty sharing agreements, right? Just as, so you can think of it for the sake of simplicity, you can think of it as YouTube basically pays a portion of their brand revenue to creators. So it's a revenue sharing or a royalty sharing model with the creators. And now what Fanstar is enabling is doing that on a deeper level, where we are taking creators' income and distributing that to the audience, right? So it's a viewer royalty share model, so as to say, right? We're just taking it one step below to the audience, right?
Got it. So Himanshu, you talk a lot about data and being on the chain and, you know, finite number because cannot be mutated. Again, can you please dumb these down? Think of Akhil and I as four-year-olds who have no idea what blockchain is, who've never heard of this term, no clue what, you know, on the chain means. We're like, what the hell is this? So can we go absolute basics?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people ask us this when we first started out. Why blockchain? Why do you need to do it on a blockchain, right? So
let's go with the what first, because the why... Once the what is understood, the why is actually very clear.
Okay. I think it's the other way around, Vishrut. When the why is clear, you figure out how, what, and everything else. But we'll go with the what first. So what is a blockchain, right? It's a chain of blocks, right? And it's held in a way that they can't be changed. Once a block is inserted into a chain, you can't really undo that. That's what a blockchain does, right? So essentially, you have your traditional databases, right, where you can write something and you can also delete something, right? A blockchain does not work like that. On a blockchain, when you write something, it is written with a consensus, right? There are parties involved which basically say yes to that writing, and once that is written, you can't delete it, right? And that's why a blockchain basically serves as an immutable source of truth. Right. So once you have written something with consensus, you can't really change it. Right. So that's why we chose blockchain, because for people to basically trust us, whatever we say, that the supply is finite or these fan cards can't be created for this particular time period, right? So all of that, once they are committed on a blockchain, then even the parties that created those fan cards can't really do anything about it, right? So, I mean, that was the why we went ahead with as to why a blockchain will be necessary, because a lot of people, once this really gains traction, a lot of people will ask these questions as to why we should trust you, right? Once this really becomes big. And the other interesting part to blockchain is to enable secondary sales as well, right? To enable trading of this digital card, right? Just as you trade baseball cards, you can now trade your creator cards, for example, right? And secondary market can figure their own prices out, and we can be the enablers of that market as well. Currently, the secondary sales are not enabled on our platform, but they will be in the next 6 to 8 months is what we are sort of planning, right? So I think that sort of explains the basics, but go ahead with the questions. I mean, would love to answer. Yeah.
I think you defined it pretty well. I also love that we had our Ranveer Brar moment where you were like, matar paneer banane ke liye hame chahiye matar aur paneer.
So, okay.
absolutely love that. I kind of want to discuss the end of life of a card. So at the end of life, is your company, is there a principal value that is stuck with the card, or is it dead? So what happens end of life?
Yeah. So the community perks sort of continue, right? Your access to the creator continue after the card life ends as well. That is basically dependent on how the creator wants to take it after the license period. A lot of the creators want to continue that engagement because that's sort of beneficial for them in the long term, right? Also, what we are planning to do with the first set of expiries for the cards is to enable priority access for the earlier card holders to the new collection of that particular creator. So let's say you are jumping from one collection to the next collection. So the earlier members of that particular collection, of that particular creators club, you may say, right, will get a priority or a discounted sort of access to the next set, right?
Let's say I pay 100 rupees to get a card. Again, I don't know what the pricing of the card must be. It must be like 10,000, 15,000, 500,000, whatever that...
No, they start from 50 rupees actually.
So to make numbers easier, let's say I pay 100 rupees for the card. Now, based on those 100 rupees, what kind of returns can I expect? Let's assume I expect a 10% return on those 100 rupees. That, you know what, the creator will earn this much money that it will give me 10 rupees for the next year. I don't know what the numbers are. You can clarify that after my question.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make 10 rupees is the assumption. Make. I'm going to earn 10 rupees extra. At the end of life of the card, am I going to get 110 rupees? Am I going to get the 10 rupees of the royalty, but the 100 rupees has been spent? So what happens at the end of life of the card in terms of money is my question.
So first, let me explain how the payouts actually work so that you understand what's the journey from buying a fan card to the end of the card. And then we basically talk about what happens after the card is expired, which is the end of life of a card, right? So once you purchase a fan card for belonging to a particular creator, the holder of that card basically gets two things. One is the royalty rights. So you become an owner of a certain percentage of the royalty rights of that content, right? For a predefined period, right? So you keep getting payouts on a quarterly level. So every 3 months, the fan card holders get a payout. Basically, whatever that content license has generated over the next 3 months, you will get it at the end of 3 months.
Himanshu, can you put some basic numbers to this?
Yeah, I'll do that. So let's say you bought a 100 rupee content license as part of the fan card, right? So you will basically start getting, let's say, 20 rupees, 25 rupees every 3 months. This can vary greatly for different creators. That's why I didn't want to put out numbers. I'll explain why, as to why these numbers may vary because of the nature of social media and the growth patterns, right? You will basically be paid every 3 months in the form of payouts, right, on our platform. The second thing that you get is you become part of a community, which gives you access to a creator's event or a video message or a tutorial or a masterclass, depending on what the creator wants to put out on our reward store. So that's sort of your continued engagement with the creator, right? This keeps happening for the next 18 months or so, right? Now, when you approach end of life, let's say it's the last day of the expiry period, you as a fan card holder, you have gotten access to all the payouts that have happened for the last 18 months or whatever your holding period was. So if the creator performed well, your content license might have given you, let's say, 200 rupees in exchange for 100 rupees, right? If the creator has grown 2x, if the content has grown 2x, right? Or you might have gotten 150 rupees in exchange for the 100 rupees that you spent, right? So essentially you are in a profit of, let's say, 50 rupees for that particular duration of time. And this number can vary greatly. I can't give you an exact number.
That 150 is completely earnings and nothing to do with the principal.
No. So that includes the principal as well. But the way you're looking at it is you're looking at the pure profit, right? The payouts basically don't take into consideration the initial purchase price. The payouts will essentially be dependent on the performance of that creator, right? Obviously, the pricing of a particular card at the outset is defined on the current performance of that particular creator, right? Or content source of that particular creator. So the numbers, what I'm putting out is the total payouts that we are going to get over the period. So let's say you spent 100 rupees purchasing a fan card and you basically got payouts of 200 rupees for the next 18 months. So basically out of those 200 rupees, 100 rupees was the initial purchase price, right? And the 100 rupees on top of it was the basically the payouts that you can attribute to the growth. Right. So that's the way to look at it. And in terms of the particular range of returns that you are asking, it's very difficult to put it into a number. First of all, we are just reaching the end of cycle for the first set of creators. But to give you context, we have seen people do more than 2x on their returns as well. Right. 3 to 4x as well. But there are a lot of creators who have given, let's say, 20% return. Right. Yearly return.
20% of the original or 20% on top of the principal?
On top of the principal, basically.
There are different kind of financial instruments. The reality of the matter, Himanshu, in my opinion, I don't know if my opinion is correct or not, is that let's say you get to 50 million users, like 5 CR people start using your thing because a lot of influencers are coming to you and joining their communities. And then you have a Black Swan event where, you know, a beer biceps connects with you or you know, some huge fellow connects with you. Badshah connects with you, right? Now, you will be treated as an investment tool.
I disagree with that. I don't think... So the way you're perceiving this is as an investment tool, it's not that, right? There's also a sense of ownership to all this, right?
I can buy all of those specialized rewards that the creator is giving me for a subscription, which you are calling the card. But alongside the card, you also have the opportunity to make up for the price of those subscriptions with the earnings of the creator, right?
Definitely.
But when you start saying that you will put in 100 rupees and... We have seen people make 200 rupees and you will put in 100 rupees and we have seen people make 120 rupees. That is defining a 20% return or a 100% return on my investment. That means you are positioning yourself as if put in 5 lakh rupees and make 5 lakh rupees. Put in 1 crore rupees and make 1 crore rupees. Now suddenly the game becomes I am a huge investment return tool where I am able to return the earnings.
You can say that in a way, but you can also position it in a way that you will be able to own a piece of content, right? And a lot of people own a lot of things, not just for returns, but also for the simple fact that they're able to become a part of an exclusive club, right? Which can give them access to certain benefits, which might include monetary benefits as well.
Completely agree. I can subscribe. So for example, right now, YouTube has a subscription feature. I subscribe to a channel. Then there is a premium tier subscription feature in which I can subscribe to a premium tier of a YouTube channel and get access to their merch, specialized merch, individual sales, specialized content, which I would not get otherwise, blah, 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 XYZ, a lot of stuff. Similar to Patreon, like first question Vishrut asked you is how you're different to a Patreon, and you said we are sharing their earnings. Right.
Same thing. Even Instagram now has a whole subscribe model. So like a lot of these channels have started coming up.
Exclusive content. So it's essentially exclusive content.
The first part of what you're saying, Ki, you know, there'll be specialized merch. There'll be exclusive content. The creator can share a masterclass or something. So like Instagram, Meta now has sort of the broadcast channels for each creator where you can join. And, you know, they said literally. It's a channel where literally they are messaging you, but you can't message them. So there is that whole thing about it.
What would set you apart from all of this is the sharing of the earnings.
Correct.
So as soon as you're sharing earnings, you become a fintech company. Now, once you are a fintech company, then I would like to see what kind of an investment instrument is it for me. Because other than just me trying to be a part of my Taylor Swift gang, I would also like to make money from the Taylor Swift gang because she's a billionaire now. And the hope is, man, she became one. What if this singer who I see on YouTube becomes a billionaire and I'm watching her and I would love to be a part of that journey. And then I'll go out and buy her card in hopes and dreams that I want that payout.
In addition to obviously the fact that I support this singer, I have seen the singer's progress, I would like to have a part.
Yeah, both sides may or may not be right.
Yeah, and I think one important point to this, when you mentioned that essentially you will become a fintech company, I think what the way we like to see it as, we want to become a marketplace for content licenses, right? Where people can come and purchase limited licenses to let's say content, right? And this content can be creator driven content or can be different types of content, right? So it's not like a traditional financial instrument per se, but so what we like to do is basically say that, you know, we are the first ones who are enabling people to purchase this limited license contents, right? And we want to create a thriving marketplace for that, right? And if, let's say, because a lot of the people who are basically coming into this ecosystem do not understand the dynamics of this ecosystem. So when we create a marketplace, we essentially will have to do those benchmarkings. I think that is what you're getting to, benchmarking against the traditional instruments, how they perform against the traditional instruments, right?
I can position you as a traditional instrument. Okay. So you are, I'll position you as one. Tell me if you agree. I do not know if you are well-versed with options. Do you understand the working of options?
Yeah.
Awesome. So a 100 rupee card of an influencer is a 100 rupee call option for the influencer. The moment influencer earnings for that card surpass 100 rupees, you start making money. Right? And the expiry on the call option is 18 months. So within those 18 months, the influencer needs to make more than 100 rupees on that card for you to start making money.
But therein, your principal is also at risk, right? It's a bet on a certain outcome.
No. If I am buying the card, the principal is gone. It's out.
No, but then you also get to own something, right? So in an options call, if I understand correctly, once you buy an option, then you are betting on a certain outcome, right? That outcome has to hit or your principal is gone, right?
No. If my option has 18 months time on it, then all of that time is valued in, which means that my option will continue to be priced and I can trade it at any time within those 18 months. At the end of those 18 months, that thing is gone. It's finished. There is no more earnings potential in the future. So now it is at zero or it ended wherever, at whatever value it ended. I feel your cards behave in a similar manner because a card has an 18-month timeline to it. In that 18 months, if the creator earns more than 100 rupees, I'll make money. Otherwise, I will not make money. And at the end of the day, I might be up or down on money, right? If you pick up, which I hope you do, banks are going to come into this. There are going to be the Chases of the world and there are going to be the, you know, Merrill Lynches of the world who would like to think that I would like a piece of this. If, see, we are hungry foxes, right, in the world of finance. You see return, you run after it, you do not care what the underlying asset is. People invest in Bitcoin. Right now in the US, there's a whole thing going on about making an ETF for Bitcoin, which has been approved.
Yeah, it's just a...
Why? They don't like it. They do not like the asset. There is no underlying, and yet there is an ETF coming in place.
I think that's a very subjective way to say there's no underlying. There's a lot of underlying value to it, but that's a different discussion. I think we should not take that.
My definition of no underlying is no future cash flow. So Bitcoin is like, if you want to place it in terms of gold, gold has no future cash flow either, right? It's a storage mechanism.
It's a store of value, yeah.
Sure, it's a storage mechanism. So just like that, in your case, it is actually earning, it is actually moving cash flow. So you guys are actually building companies out of small projects, given timeline for given creators, treating each channel as its own company with its own cash flow, with its own securitization. But instead of selling ownership, you are selling an option. Its value goes from one pocket to another, but not necessarily as ownership.
Yeah. Again, I think we can draw parallels to it, to a lot of traditional instruments, the way the world works. But I think I would like to stick to saying that it's a royalty share agreement, right? Because it behaves differently. I don't want to sort of take examples of a financial instrument, because that's not what it is.
I'll tell you why I ask. How do you price it?
No, so the pricing is based on the performance of that content on the date of the launch, right? So whatever the content is doing right now in terms of number, in terms of community growth, right? And the potential is also priced in, right? So there's a set structure to pricing these cards, right? Based on certain parameters.
Could you tell me the math behind it?
So yeah, so basically, so when you talk about a creator's content, right? On a particular channel, so that channel might be driving some level of views currently, some level of followers, and also some level of engagement. Based on that engagement, you will be able to generate some bit of ad revenue and some bit of brand collaboration revenue from various partnerships, right? And I think that is what is, all of that is coded into the equation, which then gives us what is the current cash flow, what is the current income potential for that content, and how it can grow. So let's say if the growth of that particular creator over the last 3 months is beyond a certain number, then they can also price in some premium, right? But if the growth is below a certain number, then obviously you will have to go ahead with the current numbers, right? So that's the form of calculations that we do, right? And that basically varies on various threshold on the community growth and the engagement growth numbers for the last 3 to 6 months that we drive.
Can I trade the card within the 18 months?
Yeah, he's saying secondary sales are on.
No, Vishrut, I didn't say that.
They're not on the platform, but you have the option of it. Yeah.
Not yet. They are coming.
Yeah. So that's what I said, that secondary sales are not on right now, right? Because we are forming the initial set of customers, initial set of primary sellouts in our creator supply chain, right? But eventually we forecast in the next 6 to 8 months, we should be able to launch some form of secondary sales, right? Going forward.
One free advice I have for you, take it or leave it, up to you. Look at something called a Black and Scholes model and try to see if that would fit in into your pricing for these assets, because I feel like it will just fit right into it. Just 3-4 aspects to it. There is volatility, there is earning potential, there is time left over. And once you fit in all of these three, the science has been done for like the past 70, 80 years for you to not have to build the bridge again. So it might be easier for you to price these things.
Himanshu, I just wanted to say this whole, the math behind it, you gave us a theoretical thing. I'm saying, let's take a YouTube channel, okay? For shits and giggles, let's say it has 5,000 followers. What other metrics do you need? Let's put metrics to it and let's try to understand it in
so,
that yeah. way.
So essentially, you need the community number, like the followers, right? You need the
5,000 followers, 5,000 subscribers.
Yeah, yeah. So Vishrut, the whole math also takes into consideration what amount the creator is generating from the brands. That's why I was, it's not a fixed set of model, but we can just take an example.
Yeah, this is, I am just putting random numbers to it and trying to understand it because the math, so like the only reason I, for me in my head, it just works better when you put an example to it. As much as I understand what you're trying to tell me with the theory, just for some reason, my brain just works that way. So I was just asking you if we could possibly do that.
So let's say you take a YouTube channel of a certain creator, right? So now they're generating an AdSense of, let's say, 10,000 rupees per month, right? And then that's basically the current revenue that they are generating from their channel, right? And now we also need to figure out as to how can this revenue grow or degrow over a period of time. How do you do that? You take into consideration the last 6 months of that particular creator. How have they done in terms of community growth, which is the followers or the subscribers number, right? How have they grown or degrown, right? The second is how have the total views on that channel grown month on month for the last 6 months? Then you look at the engagement, the likes, the comments, right? You pull all that data and you figure out what's the growth for each of these parameters in the last 6 months. You define a score for each creator, whatever that score may be, on a scale of 0 to 10. Now, if that score is basically greater than 8, you define that creator as high growing, right? And for a scale and for a rating of less than, let's say, 7, you basically say that this is a medium growing creator, and for less than 3, it's a degrowing creator or not growing creator, right? And then for the highly growing creators, it's only fair that they are going to basically grow at a certain speed and they can price a 10-20% premium, right? That freedom is given to the creator to price that in, because essentially it's the creator who's going to be selling it to their community. As a platform, we are in no way to restrict the creator from pricing their own assets, right? Because essentially the digital cards are owned by the creator and we only act as a marketplace. But we do provide all these tools built into the creator dashboard wherein they should be able to price it, structure it, also define their supply. So a few of the parameters that the creator can sort of configure on their own. I'll just give you a very brief, very estimated number. So let's say if you are earning 10,000 rupees per month and you're creating a fan card collection for, let's say, next 18 months. So you have a total base to play with is 1,80,000 of earnings in the next 18 months, right? And now you have to tokenize it in the form of royalty share, right? So each card can have, let's say, 0.1% or 1% of the royalty share, right? And you also take into consideration a certain growth factor, which the creator can take based on the score that we are generating for that creator, right? And now it's the creator's call. How do they divide it? How do they price it? We have three tiers: Pro, Gold, and Black. They can choose to divide it accordingly. So typically what happens is, let's say a creator with an audience of, let's say, 5,000 people, right, might want to restrict the total cards count to maybe 500, right? Because that's their whole community and they take into consideration some level of conversions and so on, right? But for a bigger creator, that number can be much higher, and they would, and people who are creating regional content might favor smaller ticket sizes. People who are creating English premium content, right, might want to consider a higher entry level ticket size. So all of that is configurable, but we do give them like three levels of pricing and exclusivity classes in which the fan cards can be divided, right?
Perfect, man. As Akhil said earlier, I think both of us agree on this because we are in the nano creator space that, you know, we definitely need some ways of monetizing, because this is a conversation that keeps cropping up every time, you know, you have, especially within the closer circle of friends and family. They're like, okay, yeah, so what's your plans? When you plan to monetize? What's the thing? How do you need it? So it's such a common conversation. So I think it's a problem that definitely needs to be solved.
And I think, Vishrut, one interesting observation that we sort of figured out once we started talking to nano creators is the fact that, let's say, everybody, when they start out, tells their friends and family to go and share their content, right? Go follow and share the content. And then eventually the content takes a life of its own and you start appealing to a certain niche of your viewers, right? But what's the incentive for the first organic viewer on your content to further share it, right? If you can educate that. So biggest example we take is Mr. Beast. So in every video that he does, he gives out huge giveaways to his audience. Let's say he'll give away $100,000 to his 10 millionth subscriber or a 1,000th like on a particular video. It's just a way to build engagement and to sort of incentivize the viewers also. So the way I like to say it is, either you can be just a viewer, somebody who's watching a movie in a theater, or you can be a gamer where you have control over certain events and you have a say in the outcome as well. Because if you do this, it will lead to a result that you are that is consequential of your actions. So I think in that fashion, we give you more interactive power and more sort of control over the outcome and a stake in the outcome as well, right? So essentially, the viewer experience also goes up, and it sort of works in a way that creator also leverages that power that they give to the viewer, right?
Himanshu, I absolutely love what you guys are doing. One more question is, this is a genuine problem, and it is a growing problem, and I think it is a very new problem. It is a 2-3-year-old problem, just started problem, right?
Yeah, and Akhil, that's also because of the fact that when the platform started out, there was fewer creators and more eyeballs. Now there are like more creators and the eyeballs are saturating. So it's like a fight for attention.
Wohi na, it's because becoming a creator has become so easy. Phone uthao, apna record karo, dalo, you're a creator.
We are right now on phones. This is my phone, Vishwat's phone, and you are on your laptop. And everybody has this infrastructure, right? And it is a necessity. You have to come out and tell people, I do this, like you are trying to right now. You're trying to shout about your company that this exists. You know, come and get me.
And Abhi, this whole thing of podcasts has become so normal. Like I met someone the other day, but this was on Thursday, I think. Thursday. I met someone on Thursday and they're like, yeah, dude, you know, I was having a conversation with my friend and we were thinking of starting a podcast. Since you're doing it, what do you need? I was like, if you're sitting in the same room, you need one phone.
Podcast ki production mushkil nahi hai, bhai. It is about thinking ki bolna kya hai.
And making it relevant also. Right, figuring out ki what content works for your audience.
Bolna kya hai?
First time we did it, we pressed record and we had no clue what to do. We are just sitting there, okay, what do we say?
Also, what has changed now, the real challenge lies in the fact that as a creator, it's not about the production of the content. It's more on the fact that how do you identify your audience? What's the niche that you're going after? If you don't know that, if you say that I'm going to be a journalist, I'm going to be creating all sorts of content, it is not going to work out for you, because that's the insight that you need to have as a creator for you to stand out, right? I think that's the biggest thing to think about when somebody wants to start a podcast, right? Because there is no barrier to entry.
Yeah, I disagree. I think production goes a long way. Production...
No, so I'm not talking about production quality.
I am saying just a small thing, yaar. Like, I'll give you a very small example. This light source on my right side, we had a photographer on the podcast and, you know, we had this whole conversation with him ki yaar lighting kaise karte hain ye wo. Hame kuch nahi pata yaar. Ye Akhil engineer hai, main computer scientist hu. Lighting, camera angle, mic, audio quality, video quality, we have no technical idea, man. So we just had two lights in front of our face, completely straight on our face, washing out all the color. We didn't know what this term washing out the color means. It means the light is too bright, so you can't actually see what's going on. This lamp, literally, there's a lamp in front of me here, which has a pillowcase on it. Literally here, you can see it. It has like, it's a literally a lamp with covered with a pillowcase.
I mean, there's a blue light in my bedroom.
The reason I'm mentioning this is because before putting the pillowcase on, we didn't know jack shit ki pillowcase dalne se kya farak padega. But when we put the pillowcase, we saw a difference. I don't know whether our audience saw a difference or not. I don't think we've gotten to that point where I can make that distinction yet. But I can tell you so much that Akhil and I, when we're looking at each other's cameras or when we're seeing the thing when we're editing, suddenly we're like, oh shit, this makes it so much nicer.
Yeah. And then you keep discovering it, right? This works. This does not work.
I remember one of the first comments that I personally got on our podcast was, Vishrut, your guys' production quality is really good. Mereko ghanta pata tha hum production kya kar rahe.
There's no production guy.
No, actually someone told us that can you produce it for us, our podcast? And I asked Vishrut ki bhai production kya hoti hai?
We are just fixing our lights and going about it.
This is pre-video days. This is only audio days. So I was using this mic. Akhil was using his phone. Okay, that is all the production we were doing. There was literally zero production.
And they were like, it's amazing. Like, your voice sounds so clear. You guys are using some very high-end equipment. And me and Vishrut were like, bro, high-end equipment.
They're like, equipment ka kitna cost tha? I was like, ye kya ho gaya?
I have like a four-year-old phone. High-end equipment.
To hear that. Because I also told Vishrut before the podcast that, you know, you guys are doing great job at producing these episodes. And I saw a couple of them. And I said, these guys are doing great job. Because I met Vishrut like 3 months back at an event. Since then you guys, 3-4 months I think, and since then you've been creating regular content and the quality has been getting up and up, so I think kudos to that for you guys to figure it out.
Bro, I'll tell you something very honestly, the quality, the content, everything has been thanks to people like you. Like, you know, you guys, like, say you give us some input today, we'll see, we'll be like, we're at the point where we're so small that we're like, we don't have a precedent, we don't have a pattern, we're like, jo bol raha hai karke dekhte, chalega chalega nahi chalega bil.
I think yahi to magic formula hai na, be authentic, just be raw. I think that is what has started to work on social media. That's how social media and creators are different than your mainstream channels, right? Channels are very filtered. But like, creators are very organic, or they are supposed to be organic until they become very big and they start acting like channels, right? So I think that's the magic formula for any creator out there.
Achha, Himanshu, getting back to Fanstar and you, how do you make money?
Yeah, so we make money on three things, actually. One is obviously the transaction fee that we charge on each primary sale that happen on our platform in the form of fan card sales, right? Then we have the secondary sales, which will kick in 6 months from now. We do have a very small fee on each secondary sale. Interestingly, we haven't discussed this aspect of our business yet. The third part that I'm going to talk about is that we also work with brands to help them and enable data-driven brand and creator matchmaking, right? Because we do have a lot of data on the creators and how their community is behaving in terms of conversions, in terms of reward redemptions. We use all that information to connect relevant creators to relevant brands and run performance-driven campaigns on top of it. So there's a different team that does all of that. So we charge a fixed commission from brands on each transaction that goes through our platform. So these are the three ways in which we make money.
Himanshu, why are you doing this? Who are you? Why do you care about creators of the world?
Yeah, so I think when we first started, why did we start, right? So as a user of these platforms, I generally felt that keep audience is just left as a viewer, right? I don't have any say in the outcome. I don't have any stake in the outcome. I'm just like a cheerleader, right? This creator has become big. I'm just, I just end up sharing their content. This guy is funny. You should follow him and stuff like that. I personally didn't like that. I always wanted care. Audience ka bhi kuch hissa hona chahiye. Audience should be able to own a piece, and because of the very fact that these are the guys who are responsible for creating that organic push, right, which led them to become a mega creator, right? So audience ke liye kuch nahi ho raha tha. So we figured out ki what is the way in which we can do something for the audience, but then we eventually figured out doing something for the audience also means that we have to figure something out on the creator's front also, right? Because the creator will only share if they have something back to get, right, in the form of organic engagement, in the form of more brand collaborations and stuff like that. So That's how we ended up creating a creator-centric model, to be honest, right? And then once we got into it, spending 6 months into the process where we were just brainstorming, my co-founder and I, we figured out that on the creators front, there is a bigger challenge of monetization. And that's when we went down the rabbit hole and we figured out that before going full-time into the project, we figured out that, you know, this is as deep a problem as it can get. So essentially, 5 to 8 crore creators in India, but only 1 lakh creators making money. That's a very big opportunity. And we needed to figure out why is this happening, right? And then we stumbled upon ki yaar, algorithms kaise work karte hain, jiske wajah se ye concentration ho raha hai, right? And so all of that led to Fanstar. All of that led to a model which could cater to all stakeholders in ways that benefited them. And that's how FanCard as a digital entity came into being, right? So it was a very iterative process. It was not like wala moment ki acha ye kar dete hain, right? It was never like that. Yeah.
Yaar, everything is iterative. Every single thing, you start somewhere, you go somewhere, but then somewhere your original mission is retained.
I do believe that. I think all the ideas are like that. I mean, you keep going back and forth.
With the internet revolution happening in India and everyone having the infrastructure to start their YouTube channels, to start their Instagram channels, to get into brand deals for their local clusters is a very real thing. And I feel it can be very freeing for someone who might be in a poorer condition in their life, who actually have things to say to the world. We see movies like Gully Boy and they need a studio deals to get out. Now you just need a YouTube channel, right? So I think you guys are doing something absolutely fantastic. And Himanshu, we'll be wrapping it up. We have a tradition on our podcast. The last founder has left you a question and we would like you to leave a question for the next founder. So the question we have for you is, entrepreneurship is insane. There is a huge amount of pressure. There are questions you have no answer to and paths that you have no clue which ones to take. How do you keep your sanity?
I think sanity comes from the fact that you realize why did you start your journey, right? You started this journey because you were restless in your prior state, right? So once you realize that going back to anything before your journey will not make you peaceful. You started this because you were restless before. I think ambition works like that. It makes you so restless that you would want to get on an insane journey. I think that's how entrepreneurship happens to most people. I think it happened for me as well, where I was doing very well in my earlier job, right? But there was always an itch to do something better, do something with greater impact. I think that made me more restless and more insane than these problems in my entrepreneurial journey will ever, right? So I think that's what I sort of remember, and that's sort of I internalize, and that's what keeps me sane. Yeah.
What's your question?
I think very importantly, would love to know